Ms. Barton?
Here.
Mr. Barbeau?
Here.
Mr. Enns?
Here.
Mr. Guthrie?
Here.
Mr. Hammond?
Here.
Ms. Marks?
Here.
Mr. Newton is absent presently. Mr. Paulding?
Here.
And Mr. Robert?
Here.
We do have a quorum.
Thank you very much. So if we could all stand. Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Let's begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Be seated. Okay. I'd like to call any public comment or non-agenda items.
Oh, I should use the mic.
We do not have any public comment.
No public comments. Thank you. We'll bring it back. And we'll start with a presentation from our Mr. Peter Connor, Executive Director.
Thank you, President Robert. Starting off with SB 972, the methane emissions bill that said is that an echo? Yeah, is that better? Okay, great.
This is our new improved system.
I see. I even sound like I'm far away to me. Thank you. So this bill would require the department, which would be CalRecycle, to provide procedures for local jurisdictions to request technical assistance regarding the organic waste and methane reduction requirements from the department, which is CalRecycle and SB 1383. That's going to be annoying. to post these procedures on the internet website and provide technical assistance as specified, the bill will require the department to report to the legislator on or before January 1st of 2028 on, among other things, relating to organic waste, methane reduction, the status of technical assistance provided to local jurisdictions, and on or before January 1st of 2031, the state's ability to meet the targets. So right now it's through assembly, second committee review. It's in suspense, which means that it's going through budget review. I think the initial analysis was a little over $1 million that the CalRecycle was going to have to dedicate it to annually for staff. One of the questions is, do we want to provide I brought this at the EC, do we want to provide a letter of support on this project? So if your board so chooses, I'll draft it and I'll get it in front of Robert, and we can do this. The advantage of this is it requires the state from CalRecycle and the Air Pollution Control District to report back on how they are doing with regard to providing technical assistance and providing information to the local jurisdictions. For us, it's not a huge element because we've got the anaerobic digestion facility, and we're able to meet a lot of the requirements. But for a lot of the smaller jurisdictions, this is a huge element for them to have that level of support. So if you guys so choose, I'll draft a letter of support.
What would your recommendation be?
On this, I think a letter of support is fine. Because we as a body don't represent public. We represent our jurisdictions.
Right.
So it's more weighted if it comes from also the cities. But it doesn't hurt to have us provide the letter of support as well.
Let me see if I have any questions from anyone. Anyone have any questions?
Yes. I'm sorry. So this would be a letter of support, letter in support of SB 972.
Correct.
And it imposes a requirement on CalRecycle and whoever else you mentioned to do what?
To provide technical assistance and the advantage of technical assistance to jurisdictions to meet the requirements that they've established. Plus, it also puts pressure on them to report, are they being successful? So this is one of the ones like the Little Hoover Commission supported this piece of legislation because the Little Hoover Commission had questions whether or not SB 1383 is attainable. ESJPA supports it. Cal Cities supports it. It just puts the onus of performance back, somewhat back to the state.
Maybe some accountability.
Yeah.
Okay. I was always concerned about, I mean, we love to write legislation that requires people to write reports. And that's what it sounds like. Well, this would require CalRecycle to basically write a report on themselves as to what it is they're doing for the, you know, these jurisdictions.
Are you asking me if it's going to be successful?
Well, I'm always skeptical, like I said, of legislation that requires additional reports internal to the bureaucracy.
Once again, are you asking me if it's going to be successful? I believe it adds a level of accountability. I don't believe it's going to tilt the needle too much one direction or the other, but at least it does put a level of responsibility back to CalRecycle. Because the challenge we face with SB 1383 is it's both CalRecycle and the Air Quality District, and those two pieces, they collide and don't always have a level of accountability on what one will stand up for one piece of legislation and one part of the regulatory statute, and the other has another piece of legislation and regulatory statute. And so we wind up, if I sit here, maybe I don't echo so bad. So what it does offer, some level of it tries to drive accountability.
Hmm. Okay, because you said that Cal Cities has taken a position in favor of this legislation as is, or if amended, or anything like that.
Everybody's taken a position as it stands right now. That this is something that's important to them. Right now, it's cruising through. So I don't believe our letter of support is anything more than just showing support. But I think it's going to cruise right through.
All right. Well, thank you for the answer. Yeah.
Any other questions? Do we need to make a motion on this, or just a consensus?
I'll just write a letter for you.
Everyone, yeah, I would think you'd have to bring it back for. I would think you'd have to bring it back for approval later. We can't do it because it's not on the agenda.
Correct. Yeah.
So I would think, in that way, it would give us also, you know, time to think about it a little more. Yeah.
Something to put on the agenda.
Okay. So
perfect.
Thank you.
All right. AB 2236 and SB 1053, the reusable grocery bag. Those two are both also headed through. They're going to close the loopholes in plastic bag recycling. SB 1143, the HHW producer responsibility. That's another piece that's moving through. We're watching that one closely because that'll affect our operating costs. last week we had a visit from CalRecycle. And they're preparing us for an enforcement compliance review. We had a chance to sit down with the city of San Luis Obispo and go through their programs. Our local assistance branch feels, you know, comfortable that we're well on our way to making sure we meet these requirements. I don't see us having any challenges, but you never know what Jace is going to find and what they're going to bring to us. So they've given us a checklist. We've gone through it with both CalRecycle and the different municipalities. They feel confident that we're well on our way to being compliant with these. I brought up public-facing solid waste containers. So in a lot of our member jurisdictions, they face challenges with the containers that face the public that are on the street. There's been a couple different ideas floated around. What I'd like to bring back to this board is a proposal to have a single type of container that we're utilizing up and down the coast where they don't already have containers, so that we're actually consistent with what our messaging is and consistent with what we're putting out there. We're in a situation now where we are financially flush, and there's a local producer that's building these containers, and it'd be nice to be able to have something that's consistent up and down the coast. Particularly up in the Cayuga CSD area in Cambria. We also visited with Compo Gas, and they're looking at adding depackaging to the digester for food waste. One of the things on that is that's an expensive proposition, and we also have the ability to maybe facilitate some of that. The advantage of having us facilitate that is that anything that we contribute to that depackager would offset any potential rate increases coming forward. So because it's also a compliance element about recycling food waste. So it fits in our mission, and it also helps maybe avert some of the tipping fee costs that our jurisdictions will see in food recovery at the HCI plant. Every jurisdiction's food waste goes to the HCI digester, with the exception, I think, of Templeton CSD. But everybody else's goes there. So I think it gives us an opportunity to help everybody out. And then CRA conference is in Anaheim this year. Staff will be going down there. We're going to it's an exciting time because there's so much going on with SB 1383, SB 54, and the balance of the things that are happening. And then we filed the electronic annual report for 2023, August 1st. The IWM reports as a regional agency for our 20-member jurisdictions on AB 939, SB 1383, AB 341, AB 1826. And it measures how our performance is based upon the Per Capita Disposal Measurement Act of 2008. So everybody talks about diversion. It's no longer diversion. It's pounds per person per day. So the county disposed of 285,670 tons of waste. Reader's Digest condensed portion of this. Our disposal rate target is 7.4 pounds per person per day. In 2023, we hit 5.6 pounds per person per day, so we're well under our target. We're a whopping tenth of a pound lower than we were in 2002, which means that everybody recycled another 36.5 pounds in a year. And how does it relate to the state of California? Well, the state, as a group, reports about 6.3 pounds per person of trash per day. So we're a little bit better than the state average, but it's really tough to compare what we do to everybody else because we're such a unique combination of rural and urban. And then the last thing is at the Los Osos CSD, with our SB 1383 local assistance funds, we've actually placed a bunker where we can take the material from HCI, Los Osos CSD, purchase it, puts it out at the nursery, and they provide it to their residents for free. And so it's giving us an opportunity to show a closed-loop application of the compost that's generated out of HCI. So if you come into the Los, if you're a resident of Los Osos, you come into the nursery, you can pick up some compost and take and use it at your garden. So far, they're on their third load, which is about 60 cubic yards in the last month, which I'm right. Surprised. It's more than I thought they were going to do. And that concludes my executive director report. Do you have any questions?
Any questions? Yes, sir.
Yeah, Peter. Are we still on the mode where we're making actually too much compost, where we just don't have places to put it anymore? It seems like I've heard this in the past. So
that used to be the situation. Now they can't keep it in-house. Uh-huh. So we struggle to be able to do this. The performance of the compost in agriculture in the last year and a half has demonstrated its value. So not only in the vineyards, but also in the agriculture, a lot of it in the Santa Maria Valley is where it's going through Gaspar Soil Builders. They're buying everything we make, and if we can make more, they'll buy more.
So I'm going to broach the PFAS situation. Seems like
I'm going to turn my mic off now.
Yeah. what we've been told, you know, that if we spread the material, whatever it is, we're basically making ourselves liable. And so how is that going to flush out in the state?
So a lot of that's associated with introducing biosolids into your compost. And that's where the PFAS has risen its ugly head more so than in this application. While PFAS is everywhere.
Everywhere.
Parts per million in the compost that we generate from food waste and green waste is far lower than it is if you introduce biosolids. Biosolids are inherently high in PFAS, and that's why we were looking to partner with a regional agency to put together a pyrolysis type of system to manage it. The challenge with the pyrolysis is that nobody's really been able to demonstrate the clear destruction of the fluorines, I guess would be the way to look at
it. I heard that's the only way to just to burn it out.
It is, but one of the challenges is that and then we go back to the basic premise that if you have a solids pollution issue, if you do this, you potentially make an airborne issue.
Right.
And so you're bagging it and you're trying to catch it and you capture it, you still have an issue someplace. So it's a challenging piece. We're still not there yet conclusively, but so far pyrolysis looks like the best option.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we're getting off subject, but it's going to be on every city's mind here pretty soon. That's why I'm.
It's going to be. Yeah. It's the word that we don't talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I just had a question, and this is something for that maybe staff could think about and get back to us later. But whether we would want to make a legislative platform. I know the city of San Luis Obispo does that, and a number of other jurisdictions do that. Basically, the board would say these are the kinds of bits of legislation that we support, and then if something comes down the pike, staff would not have to make an individual request for SB so-and-so or AB so-and-so, but could just go ahead and generate the letter of support or opposition.
Sure. I'm more than happy to do that. I think that this was a challenging one because this is something that's important, but we steered away from that at the last JPA structuring about having a platform. So I think that's something that we can bring back to
the timetable will be up to you guys. You know, it's not, right. It's not a pressing issue, but I think it would save a lot of work for you and for the board. So.
It makes it a circus every time we try and bring something forward.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
I would be a little concerned about that because, as you just mentioned, Peter, when we redid the JPA and everything, one of the things was, you know, focus on mandated items. And I'm a little reluctant to, grant staff or write a legislative platform that would then grant staff kind of pre-approval to say that the board is for a particular bill or not. And because in general, I don't think this board should take positions on, you know, statewide bills very often. Right. It should not be a routine matter, and in my mind. And so I'd be a little reluctant to go down that path for myself. So,
fair enough. I think let me bring back a couple of different thoughts on that. And then I think we can take it from there. But it may be that we pick, there's a number of different small groups that have a platform like ESGPA that may be something that we follow, that may fit more in line with our mission. But I think that's definitely important, and I share your concern that this is a reason why we made this direction.
Right, if you're a following group, I mean, on like the issue we just spoke of, you know, I'd be a little reluctant to do it, but knowing that Cal Cities is for it and 7 out of 9 board members here are, you know, representative of cities, you know, that would make me a little more comfortable. But I'm still just in general be a little reluctant to give carte blanche.
You have emotional scarring, so we understand.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, sir. All right, at this time, we'll go over the the consent agenda. Is there any public comment with the consent agenda?
We do not have any public comment.
Thank you very much. Bring it back to the board. The consent agenda consists of the executive committee minutes review and board meeting minutes review, monthly financial reports, number 7, number 8, resolution authorizing signatures for banking and financial services, number 9, the resolution amend and restate conflict of interest code. Have anyone want to pull anything? Yes, sir.
Did it go out to the public?
I did.
You did. Yeah. Sorry.
I did.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll make a motion if you're ready. Yeah.
I have a question on number 7. Can
yes,
we pull
sir.
That?
We can pull number 7, yes. We'll pull number 7, monthly financial reports, please. Okay. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
You need a second.
Oh, we haven't had a motion yet. I need a motion on the first. Did you make?
Yeah, well, still I want to make a motion. Yeah. Consent items 5, 6, 8, 9.
I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye. Do a
very good.
Roll call.
Roll call.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Ms. Barton?
Yes.
Mr. Barbeau?
Yes.
Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Mr. Guthrie?
Yes.
Mr. Paulding?
Yes.
And Mr. Roberts?
Yes.
Motion does pass unanimously, pulling item 7. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, now we're going to the regular agenda. Public comments? You want to talk about the folks? I'm sorry. Okay, so we have monthly finance reports. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question, Peter, on page 14.
Correct.
There's a huge number in there for grants. And I think, if I recall correctly, the county got a large grant. Is this the number that represents that? And then when they came back, they brought the grant back with them to us? Or
No, actually, this is the SB 1383 local assistance grant. We didn't know when we were going to receive the revenue. And so this revenue was received during May of 2023, so we had to include it in there. So it was about $1.4 million that we received for local assistance grant. It's a two-year grants funded cycle, and it's one of the things that we're going to be using going forward to fund some of our programming as far as education and outreach, edible food recovery, and a number of different aspects. But this was a grant that's paid in advance as opposed to paid in arrears. So we actually got a check for $1.4 million, which, you know, kind of freaked me out a little bit.
So could I ask you about that? The other thing about the county received a grant when they
Correct.
Were independent of us.
Correct.
And so, what's happened to that?
So that funding stays with the county, and the county is ultimately responsible for those expenses and bringing those expenses back to the state of California to CalRecycle. They cannot assign grant funding to us. We talked about that in the past, but CalRecycle was very clear that no, that's not an option. So we're working with the county on some of the programs that they're going to implement and trying to make them mirror what we're doing as well. The County Public Works Department's been fabulous to work with. I have to say we have a pretty strong working relationship.
Okay, but that right now that money went back to the state?
No, it stays with the county. The county is going to spend it. And they're responsible for it, and they're accountable for it. The monies that the county received while they were not a member of the JPA.
Right. Okay, thank you for that.
So can the county...
Chair Robert, I'll move to approve item 7.
I had a follow-on question from Robert's question, though, and that is, so can the county pay the IWMA to do it for them? And then bill the state, you know, for the... to get the grant funding?
Potentially, but you know, that's one of those things where it gets uncomfortable for me.
Okay. Well, then we don't want to make you uncomfortable, so
I'd rather they paid for it and took care of it on their own.
Sure. Sure.
And then that we just we benefit regionally from collaborative work. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. It's really the same question, but I just phrase it a little different. So when you said that they're going to, we hope they mirror what you're doing, but they actually have their own person and their own own people doing the actual work.
Yes, they're basically funding a lot of what we're doing equally. So, for example, right now they're working on an outreach program for used oil, specifically for county unincorporated areas where it's going to do outreach to the rural marketplaces where we get a lot of our illegal dumping from. So they're going to be doing a lot of outreach there to try and facilitate what we're going to do. We're going to provide a landing page for the for their outreach so that we can measure the success of this program. So it's programs like that.
Okay.
Sorry. Mr. Yens, did you want to make a motion?
I made a motion.
Okay. Can I have a second, please?
Second.
Okay. Mr. Hammond, second it. Roll call.
Mr. Yens?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Ms. Barton?
Yes.
Mr. Barbeau?
Yes.
Mr. Guthrie?
Yes.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Paulding?
Yes.
And Mr. Robert?
Yes.
Motion does pass unanimously.
Very good.
Regular agenda public comments.
Excuse me. Regular agenda public comment. Do we have any public comments? Anyone in the audience?
Not.
No one? Okay, bring it back to the board. Number 10, Chicago Grade Transfer Station.
Hang on, right there. Waste Connections is the owner of Chicago Grade Landfill and Cold Canyon Landfill, and they're planning on operating a transfer station out of Chicago Grade Landfill. The transfer station will be used to move waste from Chicago Grade Landfill to Cold Canyon Landfill because Chicago Grade Landfill is not receiving as much waste as it used to receive. they no longer receive waste from their transfer station, and I think the city of Tascadero waste is now no longer being taken to Chicago grade. So this request is to transfer 99.9 tons per day. Well, it's not really even a request. It's it's a permit application. And what we need to do is update our siting element to concur prior to CalRecycle issuing a permit. This is more of a informational item for you guys. Once this is discussed, the NDFE update will be sent to CalRecycle. AB 341 eliminated the regulatory requirement for a public hearing for this to happen. So fundamentally what we're doing is we're just basically facilitating this process. The reason I bring it to the board is I think it's important for the board to understand that with the movement of waste, we're changing a functional operation of an asset, which is Chicago grade landfill, to a transfer station. It doesn't change the permitted volume that the landfill has because they're not closing the landfill. But it is something for us to be aware of as a group. Anytime that somebody does something of this nature, when the NDFE is the non-disposal facility element, so it's a facility that's not responsible for disposal, so that's why we have to bring it back. I have to write an update to it and submit it to CalRecycle so they can actually take it, and they adopt it at their public hearing, a public meeting, and then it goes into permitting. We can't deny it, but it is something for us to be aware of. So it's not a significant impact to us at this point, but we do want to watch and make sure that Chicago grade landfill remains an asset.
So. Very good. Any discussion?
Yes, sir. Ms. Balding. Thank you, Chair. Question for Peter. CalRecycle as the regulatory authority then would be looking at relative capacity issues and, you know, because if Chicago grade isn't being used as much, the question then becomes, are we shifting capacity to Cold Canyon and missing out on other opportunities?
We're responsible for the siting element. So as long as Chicago grade landfill remains open, it does not impact our siting element. We have more than 40 years of capacity with Chicago grade. If Chicago grade closes, then we get down to about 24, 25 years. There's a significant amount of capacity at the Paso Robles landfill and at Chicago, at Cold Canyon. So it's more of an operational issue for the folks at Cold Canyon and Waste Connections. By moving the waste away from there, they don't have to operate an open face and they don't have to do a cell expansion. So by not having to incur those costs, a cell expansion is about $4 million. To do a cell expansion for $4 million for 100 tons of waste a day, it's just not financially viable. So.
Okay, and this isn't one step in the...
Well, this is something that we should be aware of.
Yeah.
Yes, and make sure that we keep an eye on the fact that it's not one step.
Pretext to closure. For
right.
Okay, thank you.
Very good, thank you. Mr. Yance?
Yeah, thanks, Robert. My question is, you know, VMT, vehicle miles traveled, and it doesn't make sense to me, and you know, that there's an immense cost to put 100,000 pounds or, you know, tons, basically, down the road every day.
It's 100 tons. It's fundamentally four trucks. And so, yes,
okay,
it's a question, but if you look at the operating cost of that $4 million of opening a cell and then the ongoing operating cost to have four people on the face of the landfill for 100 tons, I understand their position.
Yeah.
While I'm not overly fond of their position, I do understand it.
Yeah, it's just, you know, all that weight going down our roads is not helping, I'm sure, over the time. It's going to really...
This is going to be something that the county will be taking a look at because they have to do...
Maintain, yeah.
Well, they have to come back with the traffic impact. Because this goes both to county planning and it also goes to CalRecycle for permitting and planning to be able to move these additional trucks.
I see. Interesting.
But it's mostly state highways between Chicago grade and Cold Canyon.
Yeah, mostly. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Yance. Yes, sir.
Peter, Chicago grade has a transfer station just north of Santa Maria, north side of the river.
Correct.
Where is that? Who owns that now, and where is that material going?
Well, So Waste Connections owns the building, actually owns a building and leases the property from another entity.
So that the material that comes out of there were two questions there. Where is it?
That's now going to Cold Canyon. Yeah.
Yeah, that saves some trucking for that. You.
Right. You're trading.
And then the other is a lot of that material comes out of Santa Maria, which is in Santa Barbara County,
correct,
which changes a lot of numbers for us.
They're still responsible to pay us $3 a ton.
But do we get a credit for taking Santa Barbara County trash?
We don't get any credit. We don't get charged. Going back to the electronic annual report, those tons are not allocated to us. Those tons are allocated to Santa Barbara. So we don't get penalized for it.
Okay, so we just get the money for doing the work.
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Yes, sir. Yeah, Peter, I think I'll have an offline question for you regarding Atascadero because we had a specific contract provision to that, you know, we would be charged the lowest rate that Chicago Grid charges. So that's maybe an offline thing. But back to the question I think first raised by Mr. Paulding, essentially we're going to be using Cold Canyon capacity, and as Mr. Hammond noted, we're going to be shipping 100 tons, which you say is only four trucks. That's 25 tons in one of those trucks? Wow. And I understand, so it's going to save them operating costs because they're not going to basically have to run the day-to-day operation of the landfill. So essentially, they're more or less they're not shutting the landfill itself, but they're shutting down the day-to-day operation of the landfill.
Anything over the 99 tons they receive, they have to bury on-site.
They still okay.
So there'll still be some operating, but they don't have to have expand a cell.
Okay, I thought they'd be saving bulldozer operators and all that kind of stuff too. Okay, but ultimately, does that speed up the capacity reaching capacity at Cold Canyon?
Basically, you're trading, and 100 tons a day is really not that much considering that Cold Canyon brings it about. Well, I guess it is a lot for Cold Canyon. I'm sorry. Cold Canyon is permitted to 1,500, but I think they're only bringing in about 700. So it does increase that fill rate at Cold Canyon, but Cold Canyon's got a significant amount of capacity available right now.
Okay, because I was just seeing that, you know, 10 or 20 years from now, okay, we only want to run one at a time for operational costs, but we're going to fill this one up sooner, and now we'll be shipping stuff the other direction, you know, to make this one busy.
we Waste Connections is a finance company that owns a garbage company.
Okay. Yeah. So they bought the landfill and they're figuring out how to save money. All right. Thank you. And as you said, it's more we just have to update our siting.
Yeah. We're doing the siting element and the NDFE, the non-disposal facility element. The transfer station is not a disposal facility. So there's not that much changing other than transferring waste to another location. The impact to us is not that significant unless they choose to try and close Chicago Grid.
Right, and they're not really doing anything other. They're basically going to transfer it. They're not sorting it or anything like that. They're basically
not currently. And ideally, you would want them to do some level of sorting at that point. But that's a later conversation.
And in that sense, instead of having the truck, let's say from Atascadero, drive to Chicago Grade, it's going to drive to Chicago Grade. Somebody's going to put it in a larger capacity vehicle and then ship it over the grid.
Right.
Okay. All right. Thank you,
Mr. Guthrie.
Yeah. So, who's paying the transportation costs? Does this end up being a ratepayer thing, or is it going to be included in tipping fees?
Correct. At that point, that becomes it goes back to the rate case. So they're saying this is going to save them money. So
it saves them money overall, and that money will be passed through either as not increasing tipping fees or not increasing.
We no longer have any purview over landfill tipping fees. That ended in January. December 31st of 2023. So it once again, we have a finance company that owns a garbage company.
Okay, but it's certainly worth noting that this activity will increase tipping fees.
Sure.
Okay. All right.
It's definitely worth noting.
Except what?
It's definitely worth noting that this is another change in activity.
It's hard. It would increase tipping fees where? At Cold?
It may.
Cold Canyon?
I don't think it'll increase tipping fees at Cold Canyon. I don't think you're going to get a direct correlation or direct nexus on that.
Yeah.
It would be premature for me to say that. But it you know, it does reduce operational costs at Chicago Grade, which is part of the Waste Connections family of teams.
Right, but because that's landfill costs, that savings isn't going to get passed on to ratepayers because it's, I mean, unless the hauler acknowledges they have a lesser cost.
Yeah, once again, that's out of my purview.
Yeah, and that's out of our purview as individual cities that grant franchises.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, as tipping fee, if tipping fees go up, then the ratepayers are going to pay more.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
That's snowball.
So are you saying they're going to save money and ratepayers are going to pay more?
This sounds like a great side. Yeah. This sounds like a great sidebar conversation.
That's all right. Yes, sir.
Thanks, Chair. Question off of Mr. Inns with regard to just like people who sell paint and fluorescent and tubes and all that stuff, you got to be able to receive it back. Is there any rules from the state that the county who produces the waste has to receive the waste back? In other words, I'm thinking of now Tahigas down there and all the cities north of that area. Do they get to choose where they want to put their garbage then?
So generally, every community has to demonstrate through a siting element where they can take up garbage for 15 years. That's called the siting element. That's that we establish that every year, every 5 years. Because solid waste is regulated as a commodity, if we try to regulate where it goes, it comes into that restraint of trade. And they don't, it's a complicated question, but They can take it wherever the market will bear. I
mean, market.
It's a cost. Yeah, it's a cost it's element
related to cost, basically. What
sure
on them, basically.
Yeah.
Versus, eventually, all costs get back to the ratepayer. But again, that's what we're talking about here. It sounds like this is going to come back, and it's going to raise.
It definitely has the potential to do that. Yes.
Yeah. It will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So is that to say that, so like an urban county, let's say like San Francisco, I don't know if they have any landfills in San Francisco, but probably not enough for that urban population. An urban county is typically going to be sending their trash somewhere else, and they can put that in their siting element, mm-hmm. even though then it reduces the capacity, let's say, in a more rural county that's taking it.
Right.
Okay.
Ms. Marks?
American Canyon.
Yeah, I just had a question. How what's the mechanism for us being able to monitor this once CalRecycle is approved? Is there any kind of public feedback about how this is actually working?
Yeah, so every year we, through the disposal reporting system, we see where all of our waste is going. We see where it moves to based upon jurisdiction. So we actually see where it's coming from, where it's going to, who's receiving waste, and so we try and do a nexus on that to come back and figure out, are they receiving waste that we're not paying us for? I mean, it's a dance that we do every year to try and find out where things are coming from and balance it back against our accounting. The challenge with the solid waste industry is that we don't really have a lot of say. There are mechanisms we can do, but we have to be pretty careful with this because it does constitute some legal challenges.
Very good.
Yeah. Well,
any other discussion? Oops. I don't think we don't need a motion on this or anything. It's just discussion. Okay. Very good.
More of an informational item.
Okay. On to some funner things.
Okay.
The Hamlin creative video. I hope they brought a whole presentation for us.
No, we didn't. Anyway, Hamlin Creative. So while working with a recycling partnership on SB 54 related issues and some other outreach issues, our discussion turned to the need for public outreach. The recycling partnership referred us to Hamlin Creative. They're a unique organization that specializes in working with local jurisdictions in the recycling industry. You may remember the person from the recycling partnership from our solid waste summit where she got up and spoke about SB 54. Linnea's you know, they work nationwide on this programming. So on March 6th in 2024, we inquired with Hamlin about content that they had developed for other agencies. involving in solid waste management. Hamlin Creative regularly works with organizations to develop recycling industry videos with the intent of driving social behavior changes and community engagement. Through a series of introductory meetings and after learning about the IWMA and what we represent and some of our challenges where nobody actually knows we exist, Hamlin Creative had some ideas on how we could better reach more constituents with pertinent recycling information, improve awareness of the IWMA and driving people to our website, and contribute to our compliance goals and outreach. They came back to us with a proposal of three videos. One of them is using a Snorri cam, and for all of you that don't know what a Snorri cam, I didn't know either until they explained it to me. But it's a camera that actually affixes itself to the item. So you would put a camera on an aluminum can going down a sorting line, and you would be the aluminum can. It's a perspective piece. And it created an immersive experience. So a split screen on showing what happens if you take this aluminum can and you throw it into a blue bin, and it goes to the MRF, and it goes down the line, and gets kicked off, and gets baled, loaded on a truck, and shipped off to Alco to become an aluminum can again in 60 days. Or if it goes to a landfill and just gets buried, and it just sits there and buried. That was one of their ideas to show the importance of recycling. The other one was using the same Snorri cam and following a piece of a compostable item, like a piece of meat, cheese, bread, and following the same function on that. It would also portray the hillsides. It would show it going back into agriculture, going back into the vineyards, and we can use Wolf Vineyard out here in Edna Valley because he just got a 98 points on his Pinot Noir on the vineyard that he applied a bunch of our compost to. So I'm kind of partial to that one. And then the third one is the myth of recycling. One of the challenges we have is people don't believe in recycling. They don't believe it's something that actually happens. And featuring real people in San Luis Obispo County talking about that recycling is their job. And I think there's about 250 to 300 people just in this county that their jobs rely upon recycling. And so the whole premise about it's not really a myth, it's a reality. This is what we do. So these are pieces that Hamlin came back to us with. The production of the three videos would be specific to SLO County and would also include a video library of what they call B-roll. And B-roll is everything else they shoot that they don't use in the actual production. And that would be for future production or bits and pieces we could use on our website. Still images that could be used for outreach, either via social media or even stills on our website. And the tail end of this piece was after we met with Hamlin, KSBY came in and pitched us. And once we discussed where we were potentially going with the Hamlin, they're talking about getting us about 600,000 impressions through their KSBY regular feed, but also they do a lot of streaming feeds, and they also have a large social media presence. And that level of impressions regionally would have a significant impact on what we're doing. We'd also be able to share this with member jurisdictions and with the intent of maybe partnering with some of our member jurisdictions if they want to do additional outreach further down the road and put it up on our website. So the impact of this, the reason I'm bringing it back to the board is that while we were looking at this as a grant-funded opportunity, it's about $120,000 in funding that goes out for these videos and this production piece. Because of the dollar amount, I wanted to make sure that I was sharing this information with you guys and again, looking for board approval on this to authorize the board president to sign because it's a large amount of money for this production, but the belief is that this is something that gets us out into the mainstream and actually helps us helps us with our mission about getting people to know who we are, what we are, and what we do, and put some confidence into the people that are putting stuff in the bin. So that's why we're bringing this back to the board. While it is, it's technically a grant-funded opportunity, and we already have the funds available. I just wanted to, and we've already approved the grant funds. I just wanted to bring it back to the board. So now, if you have any questions.
Very good. Any questions? Yes, sir.
So. Couple things. One, are we going to own the material in the end? Is this something we'll be able to use forever?
Yeah, we'll have the not only the three videos that he's talking about producing, but it's also it will also own all the B-roll. That was the part of the value of this is that they're going to come out and they're going to shoot for about a week and a half, and all the things that they shoot, we own.
Okay, so so the second, did we have any kind of an RFP program here? This feels expensive for 9 minutes.
Right, it does. It is. That's why it's coming back to you. So because they are so unique in how they approach things, we did not do an RFP with this. They do these productions throughout the United States for various organizations. I could do an RFP if you felt that was the way to go. The challenge with doing an RFP is that we'll get the lowest bidder. And is the lowest bidder always the best part of what we're trying to achieve?
When you're talking about creative.
We shopped them.
Okay, and finally, the grant that we have, how flexible is this? Is this a grant that has to be to promote our brand, or could it?
It's mostly the grant is for SB 1383 local assistance, public education, and outreach. And so that's where it comes from. But we'll also have some other funds that we could put into it because we've already approved. I mean, there's a number of ways we can go about funding this process, but the local assistance grant was where I was leaning, and that was the $1.4 million.
But where I'm going is it isn't necessarily that it had to be used for videos or that it had to be used to promote. It has to be used to promote recycling,
yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily have to be used to promote the IWMA as an entity.
No. No, but we want to make sure we drive people to the website to continue the promotion, because once they see the video, they go to the website, then they learn more about what we're trying to achieve.
Okay, thank you.
It's the piece that leads to the website to create more education.
It's what gets them in the store. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There you go,
Charles. Yes, thank you. Along those lines, so we're talking three videos, a total of 9 minutes of end product, and a whole bunch of B-roll.
Mm-hmm.
So three-minute videos for $130,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we talk about using this, outreach and it's part of an outreach and education campaign, which is one of the things the grant needs to be spent on, I guess. So we have Science Discovery. I assume these videos would be available for their use in their things, or are they more adult-oriented and not they do adult education as well. I assume it'd be available for them to use in their education and outreach efforts?
Absolutely. They'd be available for anybody to use.
Right, because we own it. And then at that price, though, is there I would assume they have a certain level of professionalism that we wouldn't expect if you or Jordan were acting in these videos or something, but I mean that's a hell of a lot of professionalism. $130,000.
I understand.
I mean, I can accept a few mistakes.
But yeah, so there is a high level of professionalism. So we're not we're contracting the actual Hamlin office is based I believe in North Carolina, but the Hamlin Productions is a they're nationwide, so they bring people from all over the country to produce this product.
And how do we know they don't already essentially have these videos in the can if they've already produced similar ones for jurisdictions across the country? I mean, they already have an aluminum can going down, from drink to...
That's part of what they do, is they actually come into the community. They do a lot of the filming here. They fly in, they set up, they do the filming, they do the production. Then they go back and do post-production and then production, and then we come back in and we start making those pieces. So it has... they make videos that are specific to regions and programs. So it would be specific to what we do.
Okay, but that would still be a lot of money to pay just to be able to go, oh, hey, look, there's Madonna Hill right there or something.
It's a lot of money to pay, but if you take a look at it, and this is something that we're probably going to be using for the better part of 4 to 5 years, if you break it down annually, it's not that much.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Mr. Paulding.
Thank you, Chair. Peter, do we have any idea of what we can expect in terms of performance metrics, not just impressions, on videos, but we've diverted X amount of organic waste or recycling, et cetera, as a result of implementing this program?
What's that? We just finished conducting the survey, and so one of the pieces that we've seen as, and this is really preliminary because we got the survey back.
I've been wondering about those results. Yeah.
So this kind of lends back into that, but it's a little premature for me to talk too much about the survey. But one of the biggest challenges is that people don't believe that we've got enough outreach out there, that we are doing enough to reach our public, and so that they're, well, I can't remember the number, but a large number of people believe they're doing absolutely the right thing. They're not. And I'm not sure, I can't put a finger on what the metrics would be. And I don't believe that's a tough one to gauge. I think the gauge would be after we produce the product. And then we can go back in and take a look at what did we achieve. So yes, that's why it's coming back to you. It's a lot of money. But I believe in the scope of what we're trying to achieve, if you broke it down over a 5-year time frame, I don't think it's that much money, because this is something that's going to be ongoing and be repeated again and again and again. It's something that we've, to put it in perspective, I've been working at the IWMA since 2001, trying to do education and outreach. We've done everything from local television with local television productions, any number of different ways of trying to do outreach, and we've never been successful to actually reach our public and actually do something that was meaningful. This one feels like something that actually might even tilt the scale, because it is that level of quality.
Sounds good. Well, I'm glad that it is grant funded. I'll admit too that I took the quiz that was part of the survey, and I think I scored like 8 out of 10. So even an active board member didn't know everything. Yeah. So I support the effort. Thanks.
You did better than most of us.
Mr. Hammond, you got a question? Mr. Hammond?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You say that all the outreach really hasn't been given. Mike DeMille has done a great job, but then that's a smaller group, right? Obviously. So I got to tell you.
Was that a pun on kids being small?
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
TV works. Most people knows what garage door jamming means now.
Yeah. My daughter still sings that to me.
It does. Well, the point is you're reaching a lot of people. And what my question really here is, though, that are they going to be producing smaller type commercials, package can, ready to hand off to KSBY, KEYTs, all these different locations, plus YouTube. There's all kinds of video locations now that you can throw out a short video to get them to go somewhere else. And that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, so that's exactly what they're presenting to us, is that, and they're doing it in the different formats so that it actually works and it's functional in those. So you don't want something on YouTube that's going to be so large that it bogs down the download or the feed. So they'll adjust everything and size everything to fit the media that we want to put it into.
So that's what I was wondering. Three-minute presentation, that's a lot of film, you might say, time, and you get your answer, basically the message out, you only need a few seconds of directed, information. So.
Yeah, then there's also the rest of the B-roll that, we can actually take and edit and change and adjust.
Give it to KSBY, they can make something.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
Mr. Graham, Ms. Marks.
Thanks. I'm just curious why we didn't go out and do an RFP for this and contact local. There's a lot of local talent that makes videos. So I'm just, and that's one question. The other one is how did we come to their attention, or did we go after them, or did they come after us?
A little of both. So the Recycling Alliance, they're the ones that connected us. They do promotions of recycling work nationwide, actually internationally. They go up into Canada and even into Mexico. They brought this back to us because we were expressing our challenges that we face on a regular basis about getting the information out. So they've done this in cities like Denver. They've done this in cities Sarasota, Florida. Savannah, Georgia. They've done stuff in Washington. They've done a lot of different pieces all across the country. And so these people specialize in this particular environment on how to make people feel as though they are engaging. They humanize the recycling process. And being very specialized in that light, that's the reason we actually went after them. I was going to try and bring up a bunch of their videos, but I didn't know how this was going to work today here, and so I did not bring too many other videos. If you want, I can send you some.
But this is like a single source kind of thing, and I'm just curious why we didn't.
Sole source, yeah.
Didn't go ahead and do an RFP.
Well, because.
Because I guess I'm. My bias, I will say, is toward local economy and local this and local that. So
I understand, but I don't think anybody locally would meet. Well, anyway, it's just we tracked to we went to the Recycling Alliance because they do this nationwide, and they're the ones that they recommended. That's we went on a recommendation from that group.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Guthrie.
Okay. I think I wouldn't say that our outreach efforts are unsuccessful. Like Mr. Hammond said, Science Discovery, I think, does a good job. Because in my experience, whether you're talking about updating your general plan, you know, road work about big construction, what's going on with some project in your community, people will always say, I didn't hear about it, nobody reached out to me, I didn't know, the outreach sucked, blah, blah, blah. And it doesn't matter how much outreach you do. You're always going to get that comment. So I wouldn't beat ourselves up too much that not everybody in the community has checked out the IWMA website lately. And so I'm concerned about that. And also that if we look to YouTube right now, I imagine we could find a video that follows an aluminum can through the process or something. And when I saw the word miss, I mean, one of the things I think would be more helpful to people would be, here's what happens when you stick this plastic bag full of aluminum cans and how it screws up the process. And there's just as much to be learned in terms of what you shouldn't be putting in your trash as to the successful, beginning to end. But my concern, I would share Jan's concern that, I mean, this is an awful large contract to award to somebody without competition, if you will, as well as the cost. Overall, and I don't know, for me, and some people would say, well, it's grant money, and as a good colleague pointed out, grant money only counts 50 cents on the dollar, seems to be the cut of the going, kind of a thought process, but it's still just a lot of money for this type of thing, and not being competitive, not using locals, and I think to some degree, solving a problem that's not, while it's a recalcitrant problem that is reaching people. I don't know that it's as bad as we think it is. So anyway.
Well, once again, I mean, this is why I brought it to you. If you want me to put it out to bid, I really don't have any issue doing that. I just, my personal belief is this is something that you get what you pay for. But if this is your direction, I will take your direction.
Mr. Guthrie, yes.
So one, when you said they do a number of agencies, are they all in recycling and waste collection?
Mm-hmm.
So they specialize in this particular.
Correct. Area. Yeah, they specialize in this particular industry, and that's and they work a lot with the Recycling Alliance. That's how they connected. Okay. So, but I mean, once again, the reason I'm bringing it back to you is if this is something that you want me to put out to bid, I have no problem putting it out to bid.
Okay. So I share. Commissioner Burbo's concerns with the cost for the cost for the product, the fact that we're getting a lot of B-roll, I'm not sure that helps us that much because you're not going to edit it. We're going to pay somebody else, probably them, to edit it into something new. I think rather than just going straight out to an RFP, I'd rather see something come back from staff that's more of a plan that says these are the kinds of things we're going to do with this grant money, more of an overall approach that looks at if this is the number one thing, then it is the number one thing. But it does seem like it's like, oh, here's an opportunity, let's go do this, rather than here's a plan, and one of those things in that plan is this opportunity. I'd really rather see that come back first and say, hey, this is our plan for $200,000 or $300,000 worth of promotion to, one, promote us, and two, to promote recycling in general. So that's my input, independent of the RFP. But
good question, Mr. Ian.
You want to go first?
No, go ahead. That's fine.
I just wanted to wake up Mike DeMilo back there in the back and ask him if maybe you could come up, Mike, to the microphone. And I just wanted to know if you've seen this program. Would it be helpful to you? Can you integrate it into your program? Can you take it to the schools? Does it help you?
Just one moment, please.
Yeah, just open
up. Reopen public comment, please.
Is this mic on now?
Yes, thank you.
All right. I visited the Hamlin Creative website earlier today just in anticipation of a conversation about video production. And just so you know, conflict of interest-wise, we do short little videos. We've done one for the City of Paso Robles Wastewater Division that's on the city's website that I'm very proud of. We charge a lot less than Hamlin, but I think Hamlin is better qualified to do what Mr. Cron is recommending. They have really good equipment from what I could see from the website and more experience in video production. So we do little niche videos for clients very economically, $3,000 to $5,000 per finished minute. But that being said, I would defer to someone like Hamlin, even if IWMA asked us to do this job. So could we use some of the video content that we're talking about, especially B-roll? Yes. I have my own B-roll, probably 200 minutes of stuff that we've shot over the years at the MRF, at the landfill, with a variety of cameras, and we use outside videographers sometimes as well. So we have B-roll. I'm willing to share it with IWMA, but again, I would suggest that a firm that has more experience than us do video production for IWMA. But yes, we could use some of the content. Did that sort of answer your question, Mr. Anz?
Yes, thank you.
Have you heard of a Snorri Cam before, though?
Pardon me?
A Snorri Cam. Have you seen that, or that kind of a product that they're using to shoot the film? The Snorri?
Snorri Cam?
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of different makers of different kind of cameras, so that may be just a trade name of one brand. But we've actually taken a GoPro camera and hooked it onto something on the sort line at Cold Canyon and watch it go all the way down the end. It is very effective to get that point of view. And there are different cameras you can do that with, and you just have to make sure that you catch that before it goes down and drops 16 feet into a pile of stuff, or you waste, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 on a piece of equipment. We've got time lapse of Cold Canyon and all kinds of fun stuff. But again, there are firms definitely more qualified than us to do that kind of work. And yeah, we would use some of the footage for sure. I love looking at footage. So anyway, maybe more than you asked for, but. Any other questions?
Yes, so if we put this out, would this be something you would bid on?
No, I wouldn't bid on it.
Do you think we'd have difficulty finding companies?
There are local companies that do video work, but they're all over California.
Sure.
It's rich with video companies.
Very good.
We wouldn't bid on it.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I have one. Peter, is this something that I could take to, say, a service club meeting, a Rotary meeting, or Lioness?
Certainly. I mean, it's readily
Excuse me.
Totally portable. It's streamable, so you can take it anywhere you want to. But once again, this is not a sword for me to die on. I mean, if you want me to put it out to bid, I'm more than
capable. One moment, please. We're in public comment, so we're addressing the public. Any questions for the public? No? Okay, let's bring it back to the board.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sit down. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for keeping us in orderly.
Yeah, Robert.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the realm of film and production and everything else, I think it's fairly reasonable, believe it or not, for all that footage that you're going to be getting. And it is done by a professional firm that's done this before. And, you know, you try to ask KSBY to do this, I don't think they would have a clue.
No, they come out flat.
But so, again, I don't have a problem with using a professional that's done this before, and I just want to make sure that we're going to get what we expect out of it, you know, as far as they've already laid it out what would happen. But, again, it's one of those things where I think, personally, using somebody that's done it before is going to be actually better money spent for the agency versus guessing maybe it may not come out well and we spent some money and now we don't like it. So, to me, I'm ready to make a motion, but whatever you want to do, so.
Yes, Mr. Paulding.
I've got an additional thought just building on all of the discussion here.
I guess the, well, and a question first for council. Because we've raised some transparency concerns around what triggers the requirement to go out to bid with an RFP, could you just clarify that for purposes of us and the public?
Oh, gosh. I'm happy to. So I think Director Marks mentioned this would be a sole source contract based on the qualifications that your staff has raised on these issues. We recommended that this contract come before the board for your consideration and approval because of the amount of the contract. With these types of... So we have looked into this. We think that it's okay moving forward solely from the floor requirement of the legal requirements without the RFP. But if your board believes that an RFP would help to strengthen the considerations that you have, that would also be completely appropriate.
Okay. Well, yeah, I know in some cases when there is a specialty function, there's you can use the sole source as an alternative to the RFP. I guess the idea I was going to propose is if the cost is a concern, and then consistent with Board Member Guthrie's comment about understanding what other options, what other tools in the toolbox we have to use this grant money for, I was wondering if the board would be interested in just reducing the scope of this contract to two videos instead of three, maybe with an ad alternative for the third one. That way we're leaving more money for other potential options in terms of expending this grant, and then maybe you could bring back those other options as a separate board item for our discussion. Just an idea. I don't know if Mr. Hammond, that would comport with the intent of your motion.
I don't know, Jimmy, if it's really going to be a whole lot less money if they were to say something like that or do something like that. Really, I mean, once they get out in the field and they have all their production time and people, I'm not sure if that's really going to
save a whole lot.
Yeah, I don't think it would save us any money to reduce the scope of the contract because you're already mobilizing people to come out and actually do the
Yeah. Production. It wouldn't be two-thirds the price. It would be 85% of the price or
probably
something
least, yeah.
or more.
Your cost per minute goes up.
You all make good points.
Yeah. I have a question for legal counsel as well, and that is, or Peter, we do have a policy where there's a certain dollar threshold over which things are normally competitively, you know, RFP'd. What is that dollar threshold?
Typically, it's right around that $30,000 range where we start
doing
RFPs.
Right.
So the only reason we didn't do it on this situation is because we thought somebody was uniquely qualified. So, when we brought it back and forth, that this is where it's why it's before this board. This is truly
right. And I appreciate you very much. Appreciate you bringing it here because for me, used to deal a lot of federal contracting. I would constantly have people wanting to do sole source contracts, and there was a pretty high bar to doing that. And I just, for my mind, we're talking about making an end product of three-minute videos and some B-roll and distributing it, which we also already pay a social media manager to help promote some of our stuff. I just would have a very hard time, saying, oh, yeah, this is a sole source situation where these are the only people in the country that can make this kind of product. I don't think I could make that determination. I just feel that there's people locally, there's people in the state who would gladly, compete for the opportunity to do this. And the price, I mean, granted, it is grant-funded, but, I mean, people don't like it when we treat grant funding as if it's not real money. And I think I would be hard. We want to have some negative community outreach. It's to spend $130,000 on 9 minutes of videos. I think that would produce some negative, outreach, if you will. So, I mean, I'm not – comfortable with it. I would want to see something like this RFP'd.
Robert?
I'm going to announce it, yes. We have a hard stop at 3:30, so
speed a little bit. Robert, real quick question.
Yes.
May I ask, is this money time sensitive, the grant money? Do we have anything in the works beyond this?
It's a two-year grant cycle, so okay. we're not tight on this. So if you want me to bring something else back and bring it back as an RFP, I can totally do that. I mean, once again, I want to be sensitive to everybody's time. We can go on this discussion for a while here, but I think from the feeling I'm getting that this is something that you want me to bring back as an RFP.
Maybe we should stop, see if there's a consensus to bring that back as an RFP. You have a consensus? Two?
Yeah. If yes. It's not time sensitive, I have no problem.
Okay. Waiting. Yeah, let's bring that back. Thank you.
Okay.
Very good.
We'll move on to the final draft audit for the fiscal year. Thank
okay,
you.
So the financial statements present fairly all material respects and respective financial position of the authority as of June 30th, 2023. The respective changes in the financial position are that we started up with $3,380,000 at the beginning of the year, ended with $5.59 million. This is rehashing everything that we've rehashed in the past on this. The highlights are that we conducted a management review, identified operational efficiencies, lowered the solid waste management fee, and focused the agency on compliance efforts. There was one condition that was identified at the end of the 21-22 audit, was the existence of two funds with San Luis Obispo County where they would receive payments. We worked with the County of San Luis Obispo. Now we're a single fund, so there's no place where we could actually have journal entries that would misrepresent our income. The fiscal audit shows that our total net position increased by $1,778,583. So this is an item for you guys to take a look at. If you have any questions about the audit, I'm here to answer any of the questions.
Have any questions? No questions? Seeing no questions. This is a receive and file. No vote. Correct? Just a receive and file. Okay.
Right. And then item 13 is the consideration of the approval of compensation increases for unrepresented employees. The recommendation was to approve a 3.8 cost of living increase for unrepresented employees and a 10% increase in the cafeteria plan. These are all things that we discussed at closed session. We, as a bargaining unit, we get together annually. Staff meets with the executive director to propose modification or changes to the compensation plan. This proposal is presented to the IWA Board of Directors for comments and questions and consideration. This year, CPI April over April was 3.85. Staff requested 3.8, and the health insurance increase was 15.4. Staff requested 10%. So this was all stuff that we discussed in the closed session. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer any questions.
Any questions? Seeing no questions, Ms. Marks, do you have a question?
No. Nope.
Okay. Seeing no questions, bring it back. I get a motion.
Right here.
Okay.
I'd like to move approval of the staff recommendation.
A second.
Second.
Roll call.
Ms. Marks.
Yes.
Mr. Paulding.
Yes.
Ms. Barton.
Yes.
Mr. Barbeau.
Yes.
Mr. Enns.
Yes.
Mr. Guthrie.
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
And Mr. Robert?
Yes, ma'am.
Very good.
End of closed session.
Yeah, closed session, public comment period. Have any questions? Have any public comment for closed session?
We do not.
Seeing none, we'll adjourn
Chairman,
to...
Chairman Robert?
Yes, sir.
Before we do that, this is noticed... in the two agendas that I have here, as it says, the executive committee will recess into closed session. I'm assuming that the posting is wrong, but I'm not sure we can continue and have a closed session.
Director Enns, thank you for pointing that out. The purpose of the Brown Act is to give the public notice of the specific item that will be discussed. And so given that the item is correctly identified and that the agenda was published as the full board meeting to consider this item, I do believe that notwithstanding that issue, this board may adjourn to closed session to discuss the item.
Oh, darn, I was hoping we could leave the executive.
If you'd like a different answer.
Sit here and go home.
Okay. Okay, bring it back. Is we have any reportable actions out of closed session?
There is no reportable action coming out of closed session.
Very well. Anything else? Meeting adjourned.